We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 357. I'm at the beach, Scott. You know what that means.
You're
bucket
with
hat.
Bucket hat. I was going to say.
I'm with the bucket hat.
You're
and
the negative times 10 because you're with your father, probably.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm with the bucket hat, and so far, when I'm watching or listening to a game in a bucket hat, I'm undefeated this year.
This year?
Yeah, this season.
That's a good number. I mean, I'm not going to mess with that. Anybody who messes with that is messing with fate. So rock the bucket hat. You should probably put it on right now.
Well, I would.
Do you not want this podcast to go well?
On video, as you can see, it looks pretty stupid with my headphones on. It's just going to sit beside me.
I got to tell you, it looks really stupid if you put it over your headphones. But if you put it under your headphones like a normal person, probably look okay.
No, it won't. Here, watch.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks great. It looks great.
Have to tweet that video clip out. But, yeah, as I've mentioned on the podcast before, it's my grandfather's bucket hat. He was a diehard Yankees fan. Huge Joe DiMaggio fan. As an Italian immigrant, who could not be? So I think that's where the good luck comes from.
Cool, man. I love it. It's the only reason I don't make fun of you for that bucket hat is because it's got nostalgia. That's the only reason.
Well, our guy Brian down in the Baltimore DC chapter is trying to make bucket hats work too. But he's going bold, man.
He's going really bold with that thing.
Maryland flag.
The Maryland flag has got aggressive. You know, like the Under Armour guys are like, you know what? We're a cool brand. We're in Maryland. We're gonna do it anyway. Like Oregon did it with Nike, so we're gonna do it with Maryland. And they chose the flag as like the thing to do. And it's probably the busiest flag I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, you can't even make out what's what.
Yeah, so like the fact that they put it on everything now, it's aggressive. You know, I'm sure it's cool for people in Maryland, and that's fine. Like, but they didn't let me into their college, so you know, F them.
I have a hard time separating the Maryland flag from the Baltimore Ravens. So me as a not Baltimore Ravens fan, I can't. It's a little annoying.
Yeah, I don't care about the Ravens. I don't care about the Ravens one bit.
Oh, you care about your kicker retiring because he couldn't hit a kick in the preseason?
Did he retire?
Yeah, I heard that announcement on the
Oh, I didn't even see
on
that.
WFAN.
Yeah, I don't care. Kickers are, you know, they go with the wind. The Jets, they'll figure something out. I'm not worried about that.
So for the Yankees, split the series up in Toronto. I did the little post game recap video today, and I said it would have really sucked to lose 3 out of 4. I know that team is talented, but they're still not a good team when you look at their record. So
they're talented offensively. They have a little bit of pitching talent, but mostly on the offense.
You can kind of see the writing on the wall with that team, though. They're going to be a real dangerous team, especially offensively in the next three. I mean, they're already kind of dangerous offensively, but in the next 1 to 3 seasons, they're going to be a real pain in the ass to pitch against.
All those, I almost called them 90s kids, but they're not 90s kids. They're like 2000s kids, I guess.
Late 90s, late
90s, early 2000s kids. But yeah, they're dangerous. Basically, all the their fathers are the ones I grew up watching. They're dangerous. That whole team is like filled with player kids. But
yeah, and now Bo Bichette comes up and just
I mean, he's definitely one. We got the wrong Bichette, unfortunately. we got the other Bichette that did nothing, and I think it's probably now caddying for Bo.
But I think having to get out of there with a win today in a well pitched game today, first time they've won all season not scoring more than 3 runs.
So today was one of those days that I've been waiting to see for a long time. I've talked about this a few times, you know, whether it's in the Facebook group or on here. I don't even remember where I talk about things anymore. But, for a long time, I've wanted to see them win that close game, low scoring close game where, you know, we need a full pitching game and not have any kind of errors, not have the offense bail you out. But it's just one of those low scoring, close and late, and let's get out with a W, because it feels like those are few and far between. And today was that day. You know, today you got that really good start by Tanaka, which is something that we've been waiting to see. And by the way, I said he was close. And then he comes out and delivers an 8-inning gem.
Can we not overreact?
I'm going to overreact. It's more
fun.
Can
we say this is a great building block and a great step in the right direction?
No, because you know why? You overreact the other way. So why can't I react in a positive way? How about that?
I'm sorry. I don't think overreacting to 2 straight months of
either way
pitching
is bad. The beautiful thing about that was you have one guy hand it off to your closer, and your closer do his job like he's supposed to do, and you win a 1-0 game off of a Brett Gardner RBI, which is even more beautiful. It's just it was a well played game. It was a good game. It was just one of those like kind of old school baseball games that you that we really haven't seen very often.
Are you starting to eye? I know a lot of people are eye what the Astros are doing every day because right now they're tied with the Yankees for record, and they just blew a game to Baltimore. They gave up three. They came back in the ninth, scored three runs, and then allowed three runs in the ninth inning and lost that game to Baltimore. Right now, the Yankees and Astros have identical records.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's one of those things where you have a car and then all of a, you have a new car and then you're looking around, you see the car everywhere again because you, now you know to look for that car, or I'm just – or I am watching for the Astros because I did hear their update with the Baltimore score. So, you know, maybe I am listening for it a little bit more because at this point, you know, we're pretty much wrapped up with the AL East. If they were to lose the AL East, it would be – historically bad. So and this team is not that. So yeah, I think I'm looking over at Houston a little bit because I think that the home field advantage for the American League the entire way through is a big deal.
It's a very big deal, and I know the Astros are getting guys back too. They're getting healthier quicker than the Yankees are. The Yankees still have a lot of guys on the injured list, but I'm kind of doing a balancing act in my mind, and it was a good example with Gleyber Torres this week. Do you just put him on the IL and just suck it up for 10 days and call up Estrada or Valera or somebody and just deal with it? Or are you really trying to get him back as quick as possible because you're in a dogfight with Houston for the best record? Like, that's a balancing act I think the Yankees are going to have to make for the rest of the year. If I'm making the calls, get my guys healthy. Yes, I want home field advantage, but get my guys healthy.
Yeah, I'm not sacrificing health by any means by chasing Houston in that regard. I'm not. I wouldn't say necessarily if I were in Boone's spot or anybody on the Yankee spot, I'm not necessarily chasing Houston or by any means, or I'm trying to do what I can every day to be a better team, be healthy and move forward. But I'm not scoreboard watching at this point. If I'm the Yankees, as a fan, you can do it. But as the New York Yankees, no. They should get healthy. That's the number one priority at this point, I think.
But I think that's the next thing in their mind is when we see that the AL East is wrapped up. I know there's still a lot of games to go and their magic number is not, they're not hitting their magic number anytime soon. But like you said, let's be honest, the AL East is, for all intents and purposes, wrapped up.
Yeah, but that's not even a thing like they're looking forward to, and that's the next thing to look at is the Houston record, because if you're doing that, you're still winning games and taking care of your business in the AL East.
Yeah.
So your eyes are still in the right place, even though you're not necessarily calling it the AL East title, you're calling it Houston for best record. So it's not like you're taking things for granted at that point. You're still trying to win as many possible games as you can. So I think there's a difference there. Because some people were like, oh, you know, how about we just wrap up the East? Well, you are going to wrap up the East if you're watching Houston and you're trying to catch them. Stay with them.
And there's a couple good benchmarks coming up in the next couple of weeks. We got four games against the Indians next weekend in the Bronx, and then they go on the West Coast trip and play the Dodgers. Those are two, I think, because Cleveland's a hot team right now. They're going to be in the playoffs, and the Dodgers are arguably the best team in baseball.
Yeah, arguably. No, it's a good benchmark. It's nice to have those along the way for sure. Cleveland is definitely did they overtake Detroit? I know they were tied. Minnesota, they were tied there. It's right there. I know it's a dogfight. It's going to be in the AL Central, but they are a hot team, and it looks like the trades have worked out with them so far as well too. They're not really regressing by any means from that. They've actually built off of the offensive players that they've gotten, but that's going to be a fun series. I think it's going to be a fun series to watch because I want to see the Yankees right now get tested against good teams who are, playoff aspirational and then, you know, going to the West Coast. That's just going to be fun to watch. It's going to be a pain in the ass watching those horrible uniforms, but, you know, like...
They're going to say 10 p.m. games.
Nah, I mean, yeah, that'll be brutal too, but the uniforms are just killing me. Like, then I'm not even gonna get into that. But the fact that the Dodgers and the Yankees are playing with the two best records in baseball are right up there with Houston as well. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be one of those. You know, they want the bragging rights. Those are two teams that definitely want to beat the other team, even though really there's nothing implied with it.
No, I mean, it's also a team that, whether the teams admit it or not, they're not gonna admit it. It's a team they hope to see later down the road because they each want to make the World Series, and those are two of the three most likely teams to be in the World Series.
Major League Baseball badly, badly, badly wants Yankees Dodgers.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Yankees Dodgers, Yankees Cubs.
Yankees Dodgers. Dodgers is the number one team on social media for Major League Baseball by a lot, I think. Last time I checked, it was by a lot. And, you know, the fact that there's just so much history there, that's a huge deal. Like, way more than the Cubs. the parallels and the whole New York thing, and you know, just the two epic franchises you think of for baseball are Yankees Dodgers. At least I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Do you think they're the two most recognizable franchises outside of the U.S.
for baseball?
Or do you think Red Sox are ahead of Dodgers? I think Red Sox might be ahead of Dodgers.
Yeah, you'd be close, but I think in Asia you see a ton of Dodgers fans probably, just because of, you know.
I know you see a ton of Mariners fans.
Well, that, but when Nomo came over, I mean, it was such a huge deal, and yeah. I can only imagine how the generations have passed down Dodger blue from there. You know, maybe I'm off with that, but I know there's a contingent from Japan.
So let's kick it back to Thursday and talk about it. The Yankees just continued to rake as soon as they went into Toronto. It looked like they were going to be unstoppable just from their offensive production out of Baltimore. Urshela hits two-run home runs. I have a crazy stat in here. So I saw this go out, and I updated it. I went out on Twitter the other day, and I updated it. So Andujar, on this date last year, 296, 329, 511, 841 OPS, 17 home runs, 55 RBIs. Gio Urshela, on this date, 320, 367, 570, 936 OPS, 17 home runs, 61 RBIs. And right now, Gio Urshela has the highest OPS plus on the Yankees.
Crazy.
What is going on? What is going on?
The Yankees found a gold glove caliber type third baseman who can rake out of nowhere.
They literally, Cashman pulled him out of his ass.
Yeah. Yes, he pulled him out of his ass. He pulled him out of his ass.
He got him for cash considerations.
He pulled Cameron Maybin out of his ass. He pulled Mike Talkman out of his ass.
You know what?
Everybody can start harping on all these pitching woes for Cashman. Shut the up, because
it's still fair to criticize.
It's criticized, fine, but this is unprecedented, the amount of position players that this guy has come up with. Unprecedented.
The last 3 years have been
DD.
Yeah, the last three
Hicks.
Years. Yeah, but so when you mentioned the three guys, Maybin, Talkman, Urshela, in my mind, I can at least make sense of Cameron Maybin. While he's never been a superstar, he has at least been a productive major league player, and he was one of the bigger prospects back in like 2007. I know it's a long time ago, but
12 years ago,
at least that's a guy you've heard of. For 10 straight
that's
years.
Just he's name, been a major that's just player. Name value. That's just making you feel better. That's
but
all that it, is.
But you can logically say, okay, this guy's a little rejuvenated because he's on a team headed for the playoffs and he was stuck in the minor leagues up until this year. So maybe he's a little bit fired up. So fine, I can make sense of that in my mind. Mike Talkman, they looks like pulled a Luke Voit, right? Steal somebody from the minor leagues that you find value in.
An older guy.
He's
28.
Collins Voit.
I'll look it up. I want to say Voight's 27.
But Talkman's 28, never really got consistency anywhere in Colorado. They got him. The reason they got Talkman is because of injuries in spring training.
Right, same thing with Urshela. Honestly, well, not spring training, but that was the reason they got Urshela, was an injury thing, and then the fact that they had a guy in front of him who couldn't really field.
Right, Urshela was kind of brought in.
Luke Voit is 28 years old.
Okay, so it's very similar with Talkman. No one understands how Gio Urshela has all of a sudden just flipped a switch, because he has had significant playing time in the major leagues and not been a good offensive player. And now he is the Yankees' biggest offensive player. It's like I can't say that without laughing.
Gio Urshela will be 28 in October. So Cashman is looking around for 27-year-old guys that have not peaked. That's what he's doing. He's looking for guys in their physical prime, and they're like, who can turn the page here that hasn't gotten an opportunity? Because the argument is like 26, 27, 28, that's like physical prime, right? Like that's when you're probably at your strongest, at your most athletic, like you have full control of your body at that point. Like that's where you're ready to go, I'd say. So maybe he's looking for that. I don't know. But
you know, I'm surprised.
He's hitting some pretty damn good 27-year-olds.
I am surprised we have not gotten a story about the Yankees offensive coaches and analytics department, similar to the Astros pitching coaches and analytics department, how Houston seems to just pull in pitchers and turn them into all-stars. And now the Yankees are pulling in like either guys you've never thought of before, or journeyman players, or players who can't get out of their own way in the minor leagues, and turning them into offensive juggernauts in the majors, like Mike Talkman right now. So this went out in our Facebook chat. So, I forget who. Someone's writing about Mike Tauchman, potentially Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I saw that. That's amazing.
Like, well, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. But
who's up there? I haven't even looked at to see like who are the eligible.
Yordan Alvarez is going to get Rookie of the Year. He's leading in pretty much everything.
But
for the Astros.
But what are the at-bats? What are the number of at-bats?
Well, Alvarez has more.
A lot more, probably. And the numbers, with the way that Tauchman's been hitting, I got to believe they're getting closer.
But so here's some ranks where Tauchman ranks favorably.
You got to look at the at-bats too, though. That's important.
Well, no, but I mean the more at-bats. I mean that's a reason why Sanchez didn't win Rookie of the Year 2 years.
That was such a small amount, though. Like his sample size was super, super, super small. Tauchman is going to get probably more at-bats than Sanchez got that year, I would assume.
If he continues to play pretty much every day, but. This is where he ranks. For Fangraph's WAR, he ranks fourth behind Lau, Alvarez, and Vogelback. He ranks second in weighted on base average behind only Alvarez, and second in WRC plus behind only Alvarez. He qualifies for all of these things. He has enough plate appearances to qualify for these things. He's not leading them, and he's not, and he has fewer plate appearances, which actually hurts him. Because if you look at a guy, Say they're neck and neck for something like WRC plus. Well, if a guy has done it over 400 plate appearances versus 300 plate appearances, you're going to give it to the guy with 400.
I understand that. The fact that he's in the conversation is hilarious.
No, it's the fact that he's in the conversation is all you need to know about Mike Tauchman. Because if you had asked anybody who's watched baseball, anyone who watched the Yankees
at the All-Star
back
break.
In June.
At the All-Star break.
He came up before the London series, and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe Mike Tauchman got the call up and Clint Frazier didn't. Why? Yes. The Yankees are this is a slap on the wrist for Clint Frazier. This is literally, they're thinking they can rather have Mike Tauchman than Clint Frazier. They're idiots. And then a month and a half later, and Mike Tauchman has been the best player in baseball since the end of June. That's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbole. He has been the best player in baseball since the end of June.
I had to make arguments for him just to say, take the other side of it. To say that the reason he's up here is because of defense, which was true. There were parts of that, but nobody in a million years expected any type of remotely close to this offense. I mean, like, split it in half. People didn't expect that.
So, question. If you had to say one of them, if you had to bet your life on one of them being the real deal, who do you think is more legit the real deal, Gio or Tauchman?
Oof.
Because here, let me say this, the advanced metrics on Gio are better than the advanced metrics on Tauchman. Exit velocity, barrel percentage, that kind of stuff actually favors Gio, which indicate his numbers are not a fluke, where Tauchman, while they are getting better, you could say maybe he's getting a little lucky. Remember we talked about his batting average on balls in play was like 500.
I mean, Gio's been playing longer as well, so he's got a better sample size for the advanced metrics. I wasn't even considering any metrics. I was going purely off of my eyeballs and just like
classic.
Basically, I'll give you my gut feeling of the two of them at this point when I'm watching them all year now, and I would say Gio, just because Gio, because he's been doing it longer. I mean, like, that's I value time and the fact that you've been doing it for as long as you have. I think that's a big consideration because I know guys in baseball can get very, very hot for a month. We've seen it. Shelly Duncan got very hot for an extended period of time and then became Shelly Duncan again. So, you know, both of these guys could turn into pumpkins again very easily. That could happen. But Gio Urshela, to me, the way that he's hitting in with runners in scoring position, the way that he's playing defense, you know, the fact that he's hitting the ball out of the park now, it's absolutely insane to me what he's doing. And don't get me wrong, I'm not downplaying what Tauchman's doing, but we're talking about two of the most of the best stories, the biggest stories in baseball, really, of guys that have come from absolutely nowhere to where they've become. And honestly, you could go up and down this Yankees roster and probably name four or five of them, but yeah, Urshela would probably be my bet.
We obviously live in a Yankees bubble. I don't know if anyone around baseball is really talking about Mike Tauchman.
Well, they have to be for the past at least week or so. There's
well,
there's
say you're like an Astros. Now, Astros might not be a good example. Say you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan, and you're just like perusing like leaderboards, and you see Yankees Mike Tauchman leading since like the All-Star break. You're probably just like looking past that and saying, "I've never heard of that guy." Whatever.
Yeah, it's
you're not thinking looking, okay, let me Google Mike Tauchman and see who this guy is.
Right. I mean, if you're a casual fan, you're probably going past that and be like, oh,
they're probably not perusing Fangraphs leaderboards.
That's true. But that is true. Yeah, no, it looks like an error or a guy that got just super hot at a time, which, again, could be true.
But
Urshela has been doing it. I mean, Urshela took the spot of a guy that probably should have been Rookie of the Year last year and was, you know, absolutely no-name
is
guy
this one
coming
of the,
up.
Like, could this be one of the biggest Wally Pipp moments since actual Wally Pipp?
Yes, it very well. It really could be. Even though I don't think Andujar's going anywhere yet until he gets back and shows who he can be, or I think they might just change positions with him, honestly. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that's come out of literally obscurity and proved to be a dynamic player on the offensive side and the defensive side. There's no other way to put it.
I mean,
like, he's been so good.
I just gave you those metrics. Andujar was maybe the Yankees' best hitter last year. And Urshela is blowing him out of the water in a lot of categories and at least tied in a lot of categories.
Well, we're also seeing a lot of the offense just blow out the water, what we saw last year, too. When you look at the that Andujar number that we had up a couple weeks ago with runners in scoring position, the hits.
Yeah.
And the fact, I don't remember. It may have been Urshela.
It was
number. LeMahieu or...
Total number of hits with runners in scoring position.
And they were damn
near
even.
This was like a month ago. Yeah. And LeMahieu almost had as many as Andujar all of last year.
Right.
And
Urshela
was only like half a season.
Urshela, two nights ago, when I heard the LeMahieu number, when LeMahieu was hitting .415, I think it was, with runners in scoring position, at that point, Gio Urshela was number five, I think, in the league. So he's up there somewhere close to that number. So at this point, you're looking at a guy who's either he's right there or exceeded. I don't have that number in front of me, but he's right there. So, yeah. But you're seeing more of that on the Yankees team, period. Like, last year, Andujar was one of the saving graces for, you know, guys with runners in scoring position, because the whole team was struggling with runners in scoring position.
He seemed like the only guy who could put bat on ball in a big situation.
And that's why we were like, we need this guy. He looks crazy at some points, but he puts the bat on the ball. He's got that, you know, that innate ability to just make contact. And you need that in a lineup that strikes out so much. We were adding like four guys that could help?
Herman started the Thursday game and looked really good and then just absolutely hit a wall in the fifth inning. And I thought it was interesting, a couple things, actually. So his previous start before that was the seven-inning start against Boston, which tied his season high for innings. So one thing I was thinking of, are we starting to see him hit a wall because of he's pitched more this season than he ever has before? And that sort of triggered a conversation between Rucco and Cohen on the broadcast, talking about how Herman even said, I think it would be better if they just limit my pitch count within games versus skipping starts or being shut down.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Cohen has talked about in the past too, about, you know, how they're going to do it and just the strategy of limiting a guy when you're worried about the workload and you're trying to get him, you know, managed to a point where he's going to be effective later in the season and into the postseason. And there's definitely no, you know, guaranteed recipe by any means, but Yankee fans have been cut deep by this. So we're very, very sensitive to how you're going to do this with the loss of Jabba. We talked about that last week and, you know, how they mishandled that. And, you know, again, you know, just across baseball, looking at how Strasburg was mishandled and shut down when the Nationals had a real opportunity to win a title that year, and it looked like they kind of blew it when you look in as a Monday morning quarterback. So, but then you can also look at, you know, you're hearing what Herman's saying, like, don't shut me down, it's going to be better for me. But I'm also seeing the fact that he did get shut down for a while, came back, and is pitching well again. So I'm wondering where the, you know, how much you can listen to a player, how much you have to look at history and what they've done, how much you look at the injury history, and there's no science to this. Like, it's almost a complete guesswork, and you're just basing it off of the doctors that have been around him, the pitching coaches that have been around him, what he's saying, and like trying to put that together and say, okay, this is how we're moving forward. I don't know what the right answer is, because I don't think there really is a right answer at this point.
Well, you could actually say Herman is saying the opposite of what he actually proved to be good for him earlier in the season, because he got shut down for pretty much the entire month of June, came back and was very strong, and then had the All-Star break, so he had extended rest in between starts and was good in that extended rest start.
Yeah.
And now we saw him p- pitched poorly the other night after pitching on the fifth day after throwing seven innings, which is more than he's used to throwing.
But again, like you said earlier, for me not to overreact to Tanaka's start, this is one start after a seven inning. It could have just been, you know, he literally hit a wall, or the fact that he got up X amount of times against this lineup and they started doing some work to him because they're a talented
lead.
Lineup and he was throwing a lot of strikes. Exactly.
I don't know what the right answer is, but you damn well know if the Yankees mess this up, people are gonna be pissed.
It's there's one path to a win on this for the Yankees, and that's Herman making it through the season healthy and pitching well in the playoffs. That's it. That's the only win for them. Because anything else,
because
is
if he starts, if he struggles, then people will say, he hit a roadblock, he hit a wall because he's pitched too much. And then if they shut him down, he comes back and he struggles, they'll say, well, he's struggling because you shut him down.
Right.
And if he skip starts, it's sort of like the Boone situation today with Tanaka bringing him back out in the ninth inning. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
That one had even a little bit more leeway, I think. But for Herman, if you're looking at like the big picture, there's really only one way for this to go right for the Yankees. And that's for him to be healthy, pitch well, and pitch well in the playoffs. So everything's...
Is that fair?
It's not fair, no. Because again, like I said, there's no science to this. This is uncharted territory because... Not the situation. That's not uncharted. But you don't know how each guy is going to react. You have no idea how the body's going to react to different things until it happens. And unless you have, the proof, like maybe they're saying, well, we do have some data on this. He has been shut down and he's come back effectively. So maybe they're saying, well, hold on a second. We do have some data. I know it's recent and it just happened, but it's there. That's what they're going to look at.
Here's also things they're going to be looking at. Is he getting the same amount of swings and misses and starts? Is he maintaining velocity? Is he maintaining location? Is he maintaining his mechanics? Because if any of those things start to break down, that could indicate fatigue.
Fatigue, for sure. Absolutely.
So if they see any of those factors raising a red flag, they can go to him and say, hey, I know you say it's going to hurt you, but it's actually going to help you. Trust us.
Absolutely. They could absolutely do that. Jabba trusted them too.
Jabba was a whole other thing because they put so many stupid limitations on him. I don't think they would make that mistake again. I mean, shutting a guy down for 2 or 3 weeks is not what they did to Jabba Chamberlain. It was like bizarre what they did with Jabba Chamberlain.
I think it's going to have to be more of a fluid situation in that sense. But I mean, when you're seeing the fact that he has been shut down and has been able to come ramp back up in a relatively quick amount of time, I think that should give the Yankees some confidence knowing that if they do have to shut him down for a week or two, that he's able to physically rebound from that and get back to it mentally as well, because he's done it and he's done it this season. And, you know, if you're looking for something like that for a guy to feel confident in himself, well, again, Herman, you've done it this season twice. We've seen it. You can do this. You are good doing this. Like, so if you're trying to get over any kind of mental blocks or hurdles in that point too, there's obviously some recency bias where you can,
and the mental thing can actually be bad for him too, because if he doesn't trust,
oh absolutely, the mental
if
thing
he's
is
not
probably,
trusting,
that's probably one of the biggest things, honestly, is the fact that you have to be mentally, you have to be confident in yourself physically, knowing that you're going to go out there and give it your best effort and have your best stuff on any given day.
Say they decide to shut him down and he doesn't trust them, that could be just as bad as making the wrong decision on what to do with him anyway.
If there's animosity with the decision, that's a problem. So yeah,
it's a real sticky situation.
The communication needs to be absolutely, it needs to be great.
You know what I think we found out? Don't have your best pitcher be a guy that you didn't expect to be your best pitcher, and he doesn't have enough innings to where he can pitch a full season.
I mean, that's
like, I'm joking, but it's created a problem.
I mean, I'm not calling it a problem, but the thing is also, there's a mentality. This is where you look and you're like, okay, you know what? We re-signed CC Sabathia. We re-signed Brett Gardner, not only because we think they can be effective players, but we also really, really like their presence in the clubhouse. This is one of those situations and one of those places, and not just CC, but other guys that he's influenced in the past, I think can be a very big, important piece to what Herman does. And if that is a stumbling block, the mentality, the whole mental side of, you know, whether you agree with it or not, the decision of what the trainers are saying, what the team is saying, you have guys that like CC, who has been through through everything when it comes to major league pitchers. You have a guy like Severino, who's been a guy come up through the system, been a reliever, been a starter, been shut down, has come back. You have guys that have been through this stuff before that I think can, you know, be those type of leaders and help out in those type of situations. So, you know, not to say that that's such a huge part of it, but I do think that the clubhouse makeup does become more important as the season goes on. And the fact that you're seeing like guys like come out and say, CeCe, like, I don't care where I pitch in the playoffs. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I just want to help and win a championship. Like, that's it. So all of the ego and the things that you are agreeing or disagreeing, like, out the window. And I think guys like CeCe and Gardner, who's going to get, you know, sporadic playing time possibly, can help with that.
Well, for someone like CeCe, he can't really put up a stink about pitching because he just hopes to pitch later in the season and he hopes to pitch in the playoffs. Similar to Hap, like, I don't know if Hap is going to get the ball, even get on the roster in the playoffs with the way he's pitched, because he went out. I know he pitched okay against the Red Sox, but he came back on when did he pitch? He pitched on Friday and got crushed again. And I saw a stat go out over the weekend. Among qualified pitchers in Yankees history, he has the highest ERA and highest home runs per nine inning among any starting pitchers in the Yankees history.
I mean, that's bad. It's not good. That's not a good stat. I would not want to be associated with that.
Can we officially say like J-Hap is not going to turn it around this year? Or like I have no confidence he's going to turn it around this year. We've seen nothing to indicate he's going to turn it around.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to get to that point, though. I don't like raising the flag on anybody. Still, I guess that's just the way I look at things. But you know, to me, when you're looking at those situations too, like even though they're obviously at this point they're not going to be major contributors as far as getting the ball to start a game, it really doesn't matter. It's really just their mindset and the fact that they're saying that. You know, that they will do anything. Because I think when you're in the clubhouse, guys necessarily aren't looking at like who's good and who's bad and what they're saying in that sense. They're just kind of seeing who they are, what they've been, and what they're saying. The fact that they're a leader on the team, and that's it. To me, that's important. So even if it, you know, it's
what do
just,
you mean they're not looking at who's been
I think when they're on the team, they're not looking at like, well, CeCe's only saying that because he's not going to get the ball. Like, I don't think that crosses his brain. As a fan,
J-Hap damn well knows he's sucked.
Like, I know, but when you're looking at two veteran guys saying, hey, I don't care. Like, we just need to win a World Series. That's the goal. We will do whatever it takes. Like, that rolls downhill to some of the younger guys, I think. The mentality.
Okay.
And it could be big. Think, it could be big with Herman if that's one of those things. Because we've seen that fighter out of him this year. We've seen him take the ball and want to be that guy. And I love that.
And I think they also see what the team is doing with the starting rotation right now going to an opener. Unfortunately, they lost with the opener on Saturday. First time all season they lost using the opener. But
I got something to admit.
Okay.
I'm really happy they finally lost a game with the opener. I am really happy that they lost a game finally with the opener, because you know what?
But it wasn't really the opener's fault.
I don't care.
Vito gave up the lead late in the game.
But it doesn't matter. That's the whole point about an opener. Like, it could go bad at any point.
Because there's been certain games earlier in the year where they have used the opener, and the only reason they won is because they scored like nine runs.
Run support, yeah. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad it didn't work for one time. Just so we can just, you know, like, let's slow down on this a little bit.
You think the pendulum is going to start swinging back the other way on the opener?
No.
Because they've gotten lucky with the openers where they've gotten performances out of guys like Nestor Cortez. I don't know if Nestor Cortez, who's been good this year, I know he didn't pitch in the opener. He pitched, you know, that's actually probably why they lost, because Nestor Cortez pitched in that Hap game. Yeah. So he couldn't pitch on Saturday, and they ended up having to go to Chance Adams and Tarpley. Tarpley's been good.
They gave up
three runs in four innings.
Yeah. Tarpley had runners on base. Chance Adams let them all in. But yes, Tarpley was pretty good, I thought. And it looks like he was, I guess, either pitching with a elbow impingement the entire time, or that's why he got pulled. I don't know. But he's now on the aisle with an elbow impingement, which went out as a shoulder, and then they corrected it as an elbow.
29th guy.
It's just wild.
The IL this year? 28th or 29th guy to touch the IL this year.
But, you know, I mean, hey, Joe Mantiply, whatever his name is, who's been with the organization in the past.
Joe Multiply.
He is he's the next Savage up, right? Like,
Joey Multiplication.
He's the next Nestor Cortez. He's the next guy to step in there and be Steve Tarpley and pitch effective innings. Like, so far, it has gone pretty well. Chance Adams really hasn't, you know, swung it back to like anybody is up and is going to do well. He's struggled a bit, but
so apparently Brian Cashman was asked at one of the writers' dinners in the offseason, hey, what's a guy that's on no one's radar that might do something this year? And he said Joe Mantiply.
Oh, that's reported that he said that on.
I forget if it was Eric Boland or one of the other like Daily News or Post guys tweeted out,
yeah,
like something like that. Like I talked to Cashman at one of these writers' dinners back in like December, and he mentioned Joe Mantiply.
Was it one of those things where he said, "Hey, don't write this, but keep an eye, or you can write it now."
I mean, maybe it was written about, and no one ever batted an eyelash because no one knew who Joe Mantiply was.
Well, we didn't.
When they, do you think when other they GMs acquired,
are, why are other GMs not scouring those lists? Like, why don't they have Google alerts set up for, you know, the fact that someone,
whatever Brian Cashman says
is a
guy.
Then
I think
for.
Maybe Brian Cashman will throw out incorrect. Like, you know how when you try and find a rat,
you put out wrong information. Yeah.
That could be Brian Cashman too. He's just sending out random minor leaguers' names to see what GMs are going to bite on him.
I love it. I think it's gold. But in reality, he sent it out and it was real and nobody did anything.
Oh, I mean, the guy, we'll see.
They're like, do you really think I would put the correct information out there? Do you think I'm that stupid?
Leave it to Brian Cashman to find the loophole in the only one trade deadline
post-trade deadline move
where you can get you can trade non-40 man guys.
Yeah, no, it's I saw it come up on my phone, and because we get emails from the Yankees like when transactions happen, and it's pop up. I'm like, what? And so I started looking, like, I know that name, first of all. I'm like, does he have a major league contract? Like, what is the deal with this trade? How did it happen? And yeah, minor league trade. So good for Cashman. So, that's like, this is Cashman season, baby. Like, Cashman's yeah, everybody else is screwed. But you know what? I'm about to go to work.
So
I'm not picking up the phone if I'm another GM.
Maybe people aren't going to like this because they hate the Patriots. Many people know I'm a Patriots fan. And Bill Belichick will just do things that no one knows about. Like the time he did like the offensive line shifts against the Ravens in the playoffs just to prove that he knew a rule that the other coaches didn't know. Like, I don't put it past Cashman for making this trade just to show that he could figure out how to beat the system.
Just so you know, I'm smarter than you, and this is how you break the system.
But doesn't that strike you as a Brian Cashman move?
Yeah, yeah. He's like the guy that you hire. He's the ex-con that you hire. You know, that are, you're trying to find the insecurities in your system.
He's the catch me if you can guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank on his actual name, but
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, yeah, the guy in the movie, it'll probably hit me at some point in this episode. But I think it's interesting because a lot of GMs were quoted saying they didn't like that it's a single trade deadline. So I could see, and it, since there's movement, even like off the 40-man roster, that might be a rule that's instituted next year that you can't do that anymore. I mean, I don't know how that got past Major League Baseball rulemakers anyway. Maybe they don't care. But I could actually see
I think
see
it could be them not caring.
Okay.
Because theoretically,
but there's
got
to be something
like that,
you can fudge. There's got to be a way you could fudge that to actually...
Oh, they'll find a way. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, there's a way. I mean, even you look at the Joe Panik thing. Maybe Joe Panik wanted to go home. And he knew that the Mets would claim him, and they were the highest waiver.
Right.
And so he's like, just release me because I want to go home. Like, if you have any respect for me at this point, you know I'm not going to be here. If you release me now, the Mets are going to pick me up, and I'll be able to go home and play baseball. You don't think that conversation happened? I guarantee it happened.
So I think there'll be Major League Baseball people investigating what has gone on this season after the trade deadline, and they're going to adapt because I could see them moving it to a single deadline on August 31st or August 20th or later in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it does put teams right now into interesting positions if injuries happen and you can't make a move at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pushed it back if they stick with one deadline and they push it back.
I think it should just be August 31st. Non-waiver trade deadline, August 31st. On August 31st, a guy has to be on your 40-man roster in order to be eligible for the playoffs.
The problem is that you're now pushing it so far back for the whole entire trade deadline that you know teams are completely out of it. But
maybe you'll still get movement in late July and early August.
No, you will, but at the same time, like, you're going to have some big-time sellers, and it could really affect the way that the it could affect the strengths of different teams in a really big way. I don't know. I could just see it being manipulated in a bad way, where teams are definitely, you know, not in it and just selling, and then the product being much worse in 2 to 3 years.
What is the reason they did it? Do we actually know the reason why they did this?
I don't know the exact reason, like why the definition of why.
I believe what was talked about why they got rid of the non-waiver trade deadline was to increase movement at the July 31st deadline, to sort of create like an NBA offseason news cycle, where you just get a flood of information and it's all anyone's talking about. I think that's what they wanted.
I don't think it really mattered, though, because I think you were
backfired.
Well, you were still getting that no matter, even last, like with all the trade deadlines.
Right, you get that every year. You get that every
year. You get that in the offseason in December. I mean, you can look at, it's funny because if you look at like.
I mean, shit, talk about where they need more movement. It's the offseason.
That's where they need to impose a deadline for sure, so that things don't drag out and people can move on with their lives and actually like understand.
And also so we don't have two of the best young free agents ever to hit the market unsigned in March.
Yeah. Well, and then have guys not sign, period. So if you have a signing period, then you allow people to come into camp. You allow teams to introduce them to your fans. You allow them to make moves in the marketing side and establish themselves within a market. There's a lot of things that you can do if you are that are positive to me for baseball and for fans. Moving this up, I don't think if that were the reason, like to stimulate the end of July, like it was already a big deal. The moves that happen later aren't needle. Those aren't ones like the fact that Andrew McCutchen, as an older veteran guy, got moved over from the San Francisco Giants to the Yankees. Like, it was cool for the Yankees, like us. We're like, okay, I didn't expect that to happen. Baseball didn't care about that. Like, baseball doesn't care about those types of non, you know, post deadline moves.
No,
not as much, at least.
Yeah, but I think it's GMs have specifically said I don't like this, so I think something will change.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
So I want to tell you guys about Indochino before we move on to the rest of the show. Scott, I'm going to a wedding next weekend. I'm wearing an Indochino suit.
Nice.
I went and I got it custom fit, custom made. It's a really cool process. You go in, you feel like a baller when you go in there.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you can't go into a place and just drop like $5,000 on a suit. Like, that's not realistic. But you still want it to look good. You want it to feel good. You want to feel confident in the suit or tux that you're wearing.
You want to feel Indochino, like it's made to you, too. That's a big deal.
And you don't want to go buy off the rack and then be like, well, it kind of fits, but it doesn't really fit. Like, this thing's going to fit you like a glove.
Right.
So I went in there. They measured me. I'm able to pick out the fabric that I want. You can custom the inside lining. You can put your initials on it. So I got AHR on there.
Dangerous.
Like
dangerous,
I said.
Dangerous picking the fabrics. Women are are you sure I want my husband to be to do that? It's dangerous.
So I brought Leanne, and I also was like, this doesn't look stupid, right? To the people in there helping me.
Leanne gets married, and there's pinstripes on the inside of her suit.
I was like, well, how about wearing a white? Can grooms wear white? Is that a thing? White with pinstripes. I'll put a number on the back, no name. But if you guys are looking to buy a new suit, buy a tuxedo, if you're looking to get something for a wedding you're going to, or maybe you're getting married yourself and you want to set up your groomsmen, Indochino is definitely the way to go. Like I said, you go in there, you make a custom, you make an appointment, they custom fit you. You are confident that you're getting a quality product. There's over 40 showrooms in North America. So you just search on Indochino.com. You can even input your measurements online. Or you can go in and get measured if you don't know what they are. Scott, tell people how they can get a deal with Indochino.
Yeah, so this week our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com when you enter the promo code Bronx at checkout. Plus you get some free shipping, which is awesome. That's a great thing. That's Indochino.com, promo code Bronx for any premium suit for just $369 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made to measure suit. Again, these are for you, tailored for you. So once again, go get your custom suit and don't go back. Indochino.com, promo code Bronx.
So I got some numbers here about starting pitching and number of times through the order. We know the Yankees don't like to really stretch their guys through third time through the order, but the numbers really bear it out. So first time through the order, Yankees pitching allows a 731 OPS. Second time through the order, 781 OPS. Third time through the order, 971 OPS. League average is 797.
Yeah.
And they're allowing a 971. That's a huge difference.
That's why we have a bullpen, isn't it?
Well, yes. But you'd say, okay, well, is that just like numbers being skewed by Sabathia and Hap, and it's not the guys who you're really going to be trusting? Not really, because Herman, third time through the order, 898 OPS. Paxton, 985. Tanaka, 1.002. It's going to be under 1,000 now because it's excluding Sunday stats where he went eight innings. Sabathia, over 1,000 OPS. Hap, actually, 889. Surprisingly the best out of any of them, third time through the order. But the catch on him is 800 OPS every time through the order.
Yeah. It's you don't want it to be like that way the entire time through. He's got a lot of...
Whereas, like, Herman, Paxton, and Tanaka really fall off a cliff the third time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to see where that is on baseball, you know, across the board and how prevalent you see this.
I gave you the stats, 797 league average, third time through the order for starting pitching.
I know, but when you're looking at it, what I mean is like dissecting each line, each rotation, and like seeing where those numbers actually lie for the top guys too. And I'm curious to see in today's baseball, you know, where the top 10% or the top 25% of baseball pitchers today in 2019, where they rank in a stat like that, because I have to assume it's higher, you know, going back to other years as well. And the fact that there's, you know, such a focus now on bullpen, and the Yankees have spent so much money on their bullpen, the fact that they have all these guys that can come in and pitch, you know, I don't think this number hurts us as much in the playoffs as it does in the regular season, because you're trying to stretch guys, you're trying to save your bullpen as much. But when you go to the postseason, like, to me, that number, while it's not great, obviously, you're at that point on the third time through, you're almost at a pitch by pitch, batter by batter, you know, situation. So who cares? Like, if they get past the guy, or if you have horrible numbers, you have this bullpen in there for this reason. So I don't think it actually affects the Yankees as much when you're looking at like what we're here for, and that's to win a championship.
Well, the Yankees pitching staff overall is built to these numbers, meaning that they have a stacked bullpen for specifically this reason.
Yeah, they're combating it. They know it's there.
But you know, the third time through the order could come in the sixth inning, or it could come in the fourth inning. Like, that's a big difference.
Well, I mean, if it's coming in the fourth inning, you got other problems.
Could it even? What's the minimum it could come through? I should have figured this out.
I don't know. Nine times three.
Sixth inning. Seventh inning is the minimum it could come.
Unless they're just getting lit up.
No, I'm saying if you go through the order and you get everyone out,
two times
through, you're at the seventh inning.
Okay, that's great.
You're not necessarily getting lit up if it's in the fourth or fifth inning.
You could maybe have
given up two runs, or there's just a lot of base runners.
There could be a lot of I'm saying there's other things in that are factors in that particular game. So if you're getting to the minimum and you've gotten to that point, like, things are probably going pretty well. Literally, you're pitching a perfect game at that point.
And at that point, like you said, you're batter to batter, and the moment
if you're
you
pitching
see
a
trouble,
perfect game, I'm not looking at that number. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not talking about a perfect
game. But
say, okay, that was an extreme example. Let's do a realistic scenario.
They're always going to look at that number. The fact that they have got, that's why the opener doesn't work to me in the playoffs. That's exactly the reason. Because they want the embarrassment of riches, these guys to be able to come in key positions later in the game. Because if their starting pitchers are able to go five innings, six innings, then now you are at a point where you have the back of that bullpen where you spent the money on, that you hang your hat on, you know is dominant. You want them to come in because those numbers now become a factor. So yeah, it's a big deal, and it's how this team was built.
I think a big issue with this is why. Why are the Yankees so much worse than league average third time through the order? Is it the pitchers they've chosen? Is their pitching style? Is it just how they're coached? They're coached, give everything you have the first two times through the order, and then we're going to go to our bullpen? I'm curious what the reason is and why it's this way.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that is. You know, I think if you're playing at home, when you're looking at Yankee Stadium, some mistakes become, you know, more glaring because balls can leave the yard easier. You know, that could be a real thing when you're talking about home games. So whereas you're pitching in more of a pitcher friendly ballpark, fifth, sixth inning, you have a long fly ball, it's caught, it's out at Yankee Stadium. So, you know, you're going to see more of a disparity, I think, in home runs probably while they're at home. But as far as overall, I don't have an answer for you.
Well, it's something I was definitely keeping an eye on with Tanaka today as he was pitching deeper into that game, because I knew the stats. I had looked him up before the game. So I'm thinking, and I'm sure it's something that Boone was looking at. And as he's going third time through the order, and he was still pitching well, I was kind of trying to think, okay, well, is this really what Tanaka's going to do? Or is he going to serve up a home run ball at some point? But he didn't. But that's sort of like the game of chicken that the coaches in Boone is playing with someone like Tanaka going into a third time through the order.
Well, especially with a 1-0 game. That's like one of the bigger scenarios.
One mistake pitch and you're screwed.
So the funny thing is, we've talked about this in the past, how Boone has, he has that tendency to give a guy like the benefit of a doubt in a position where he thinks that, you know, maybe that guy could benefit from a good outing or just a little confidence boost. Like, I feel like that's one of the things that we've learned about him is that he tries to give guys the opportunity to build confidence when the situation allows for it and when you're needed. The way I see things is that you're playing the Toronto Blue Jays, you're up, you know, a significant margin in the division, and you have Tanaka who's pitching well. He's letting them ride at that point and saying, you know what, like, this is a scenario, even if it goes askew a little bit, like, he probably wouldn't let it go too far, but he was going to give him the opportunity to get as deep as he possibly could into that game. Now, there were probably some stipulations where if there were X amount of people on base at a certain point, he was going to pull him, but then you could still almost pull him with limited damage. Even if you had a guy on and a home run, that's still only two runs. Like, if you're looking at it in that say, I'm going to limit the damage, but I'm also going to give him the opportunity to have, you know, just one of those games that he really needs. And, I'd like that about Boone, honestly. Like, I do like that because I think that is one of those factors in baseball that statistics and analytics will never pick up on, ever. You will never, ever be able to pick up on something like that. But in a baseball player's mind and the way that he needs some confidence, like, I think it does go, a good amount of way. The fact that your manager will give you that opportunity and has your back in that sense. So I like that style.
With Tanaka today, it was also huge, like you said, huge for his confidence, but also huge because the team's got a doubleheader on Monday, and they have no off days.
I mean,
what?
Who's the opponent?
But you're still going to have to, okay. But you don't have a starting pitcher for game two.
I mean.
So now you can go bullpenning in game two, hopefully, if Paxton also pitches well in game one. Tanaka going into the ninth inning today and only having to use Chapman after him is important, even if it is against the Orioles, because guess what? You still got to get 27 outs against the Orioles, even though those are easier outs. They're still outs you have to get.
Well, now that Gary Sanchez is back, Romine can pitch with no problem, so that, you know, they'll be fine. They can extend him and just make him go out there.
He's no longer the starting catcher. He's just the backup catcher.
No, I joke about it, but it's important, I think, in multiple ways, just to get a guy over that hump and get into the ninth inning like
that. Let's be honest. The real reason it's important is because the Yankees are not going anywhere in the playoffs unless Tanaka's good.
Well, yeah, they absolutely need him to be there. But you could also go the other way and say, well, why didn't you pull him in the eighth and leave it as fully confident, or even in the seventh and say,
I'm not going to kill Boone for that.
Boone. I'm certainly not doing that. But what my point is that. You could look at this a couple other ways too, if you wanted to. If you wanted to really stretch it, you could say, well, you know, I'm happy with Tanaka going through seven. Let's pull him and go that route.
And guess what? In the playoffs, they would have pulled him.
Maybe depending on the situation and how the bullpen was. But here's the thing: like games like
probably
today,
pull him.
But games like today will give now that little bit of confidence in the back of Boone's mind, saying he can do it. That's other reasons. That's other things why getting those experiences, getting those little notches, you know, it's a win, but it's also a win in the sense that, hey, we know that Tanaka can win a 1-0 game against a potent offense who's been hitting the ball really well against us in this series. There's a lot of young talent, but he can go out there and do that. It's another thing in the arsenal and the back of their mind for the coaches and for Tanaka.
So while I was certainly nervous, that ninth inning at bat, Chapman versus Vlad Jr. was fun.
It was awesome.
Like, that's just a fun baseball.
Yeah.
5 minutes, tense guy throwing 100 miles an hour, a guy trying to hit a ball 500 feet.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best young players in baseball,
and
one of the best closers over the last decade in baseball. Like, that is a fun moment.
So the Toronto Blue Jays are going to be a problem.
Yeah.
They're going to be a problem watching Vlad Jr. and Bichette and Biggio to a lesser extent, but just, you know, the fact that that Bichette's just a free swinging filthy kid, and Vlad Jr. same thing, like, the kid just rakes. And when you see the the velocity off the bat. Like that ball that he hit to left field that bounced off the wall. Yeah. Like, oh my God, that thing, there is still a dent in that wall. The kid mashes. So watching a hard throwing guy like Chapman, who may or may not be around the plate, and then Vlad Jr., who is just a, you know, the son of like the biggest free swinger you can think of in our generation, then it's fun to watch. And the fact that got him to roll into a double play, even better.
Yeah, do you think we'd be saying it was fun to watch if he hit a ball into the second deck like he almost did down the left field line?
The baseball fan inside me could recognize the funness of that.
That's what we talked about with the Baltimore series. Yeah. Like, yes, it was fun to watch the Yankees destroy an opponent, but at the same time, I like watching good baseball games and competitive baseball games. Yeah. So give me the 1-0 game today 1,000 times out of 1,000 over those Baltimore.
Yeah. Because there's a level of uncertainty and intensity that you'll never get in one of those games. Well, it's fun to hit the ball out of the park, but you know, moments like that, you're on the edge of your seat now for every single pitch when you're working with those guys, because you know the guy at the plate can absolutely hurt you.
And usually, the longer an at bat goes, like it did, the worse it gets for the pitcher and the batter's timing it up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. It was good. And the Chapman threw it, man. The pitch to close the game out pulled the string on him twice in that at bat, but it was a great pitch. And he's really, the thing I'll tell you about Chapman that I've noticed so much this year is that he's still got the velocity. He's hit 100, 101 on the radar recently this past week. So we're seeing the velocity there. Whereas people were like, maybe it isn't there. It's there.
104 is not there anymore.
104 is not there, but 104 definitely doesn't need to be there. But the fact that you could throw 101 over the plate, that's pretty damn good, and I'll take it. But the fact that he could pull a string and throw it for a strike, huge, huge.
A couple other injury updates. So Sanchez back, he hit a home run. Gleyber was day to day, he's back.
Day to day, like, still. What? He makes me nervous.
Yeah. Stanton was placed on the 60-day IL and people freaked out, but it's retroactive to June 25th. He can be eligible to return August 26th.
Right. It was a bookkeeping move. It was nothing.
They needed to clear up, because when you put a guy in the 60-day IL, he's off the 40-man roster.
Right. Yeah.
It so was, maybe now he – could he be traded now?
It was a move about nothing.
Holder goes on the IL, shoulder inflammation. I wonder if that had anything to do with the fact that they tried to stretch him to 3 innings in that opening in Baltimore.
Who knows? I mean, it's also late in the season, and you know, anything could irritate a guy, I think. But he's been so up and down with the way he's pitched, although he's pitched a lot better recently. It's you don't want to see that, obviously. Like, these injuries just don't go away, man. It doesn't matter. They're not taking out. The injuries don't care who you are. They're taking out everybody.
And the Yankees keep just winning through them.
That's what's wild.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. I hope it's one of those things, but you know, we'll talk about this in December and see if it is.
What do you mean?
I'm not trying to go into it, but it just feels like it, when you see things like that, you get a good feeling about it. That's all.
Oh, okay. I think I know what you're saying. You don't want to say it because you don't want to.
Yeah, can you
don't want to jinx anything.
Can you just stop talking about it, please?
All right. I'll talk about SeatGeek instead. So the Yankees are coming back home. They got a bunch of games this week. Doubleheader on Monday. Then they got Cleveland, which should be a really fun series. If you guys are trying to go to that game, definitely should check out SeatGeek. SeatGeek makes it easy for you to sell to buy tickets. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites get make getting into the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. SeatGeek definitely cares about the customer experience. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews on their app, so you know they have good customer satisfaction. They pull together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then they rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. They also color code it in the app, green all the way to red, so you can know if you're getting a good deal. SeatGeek displays them, like I said, on the interactive map. And they're also fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. Sometimes you can go out there and you don't know what you're buying off the internet. You know you're getting a qualified, legit ticket from SeatGeek.
Look, this is coming. We're coming into the best time of the year for sports, period. You got football starting. You got the end of the baseball season going. So postseason baseball, beginning of football, it's all here. So if you're trying to go to some NFL games, if you're trying to go to some playoff games potentially later in the season, or whatever you're trying to do, go to SeatGeek. I will be buying Jets tickets off of SeatGeek. I'm a Jets fan. I'm excited for the season. I'm buying in. I'm getting ready. I love the fact that our coach is crazy. I love the fact that he sniffs some smelling salt before
bumping
a game.
Smelling salts in a pre-season game.
I love the fact
game.
That we have a quarterback who has not only looks the part, feels the part, but can throw the ball. We got receivers everywhere. We got a running back. I feel really good. And maybe I'm buying in because I always do when they look good and then they crush my soul. But I don't
7-9.
I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. I will be buying Jets tickets. In fact, I use the ticket to buy Jets tickets. Like I've said, I've bought spring seat tickets. I've done it all. SeatGeek will even give you $10 back off of your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use the promo code Bronx. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase.
Couple things I want to talk about. One of them is the Field of Dreams thing the Yankees are doing next August. So the London thing, when it was first announced, I was like, oh, that's cool. I mean, it's Yankees, Red Sox in another country. I'm actually super pumped for this Field of Dreams thing. And maybe it's because I'm just a fan of the movie. But I don't know. For some, like that commercial where they inserted Aaron Judge into the Field of Dreams scene where he's asking, is this heaven? And then Costner goes, no, it's Iowa. Like, that was cool. You're shaking your head like, no, you're not on board.
Oh, no. I'm on board with the whole like gimmick. Like the gimmick is cool. And it's a gimmick, but I am
sure
it's fine. Like
you've got 162 games.
Oh,
you
yeah,
have
go gimmicky.
Room to do gimmicks.
I got no problem with it. I really don't. I think it's a cool concept. I think that it's very neat. Like the promos. I was shaking my head at the promo stuff. That's all. Just because this is like a digital marketing guy and like as a designer and some of them drove me nuts. But that's just me being, you know, anal retentive about certain things. But the whole concept I think is very cool. The fact that it's going to be a temporary stadium that they're building with like a path going from the movie set to the new stadium. It's reminiscent of was it last year where they played on the military?
Williamsport.
No.
Oh yeah, military. Was it? But they also did Williamsport.
Yeah, that's right.
Little League.
Right. I forgot about that one. But
they're doing that again this year. The Red Sox are playing Williamsport.
Okay.
This year or next year?
They played on a military base last year, the year before that, whenever it was. Because I remember the guy that catches all the home runs like stole a ticket from one of the military guys, which was irritating as all hell.
Oh, yeah.
like they're only supposed to be enlisted guys or whatever going in
Hempel.
There. Yeah,
Hempel.
Yeah. And like you're there. Like, why are you there? How'd you get that ticket? Would you?
Yeah.
It was just.
We're going to have a situation like that with this Field of Dreams thing because there's only 8,000 seats.
Right. Yeah, 8,000 seats.
Not that it's military, but it's going to be a hard ticket to get.
It'll be a difficult
sold.
Ticket. Yeah, you know, a lot of corporate sponsors, I'm sure. I don't know.
And this is a White Sox home game.
I don't know what it'll be for like standing room only, like how many they'll actually let into the area. But you will see that. I guarantee you will see at night a line of cars, headlights going into the distance. That will happen. One way or another.
Yes. And Costner should throw out the first pitch.
I really hope he does. Or Ray Liotta, if you want to get like really.
Can they just both be there?
Maybe they should throw it out to each other.
James Ooh. Earl Jones doing the PA?
James Earl Jones definitely needs to be the either the PA or in the broadcast in some fashion. Has to be. And if you want first pitch, like that's the way you go. You go Costner to Liotta.
With James Earl Jones doing the call.
Well, I don't care. No. I want
introductions.
James Earl Jones in the game. I want.
Oh, you want him call. You want him legit calling the game like on the TV broadcast.
It's in some fashion. I want him involved in the game. I want Costner and Liotta first pitch. Costner to Liotta as the catcher. That's what I want.
Okay.
Because
I don't.
Perfect
I don't
remix.
See how. What other route are they going to go? That's the only logical thing.
They better go that way. Look, baseball's missed opportunities, like the uniforms, Dodgers, Yankees, missed opportunity. So who knows what they'll do. But the whole thing is very cool. Definitely, we're going to be looking for those tickets. So if you're listening to the show and you have the ability to get those tickets, please get in touch with us because we're on board. We're going out there one way or another. So let us know. It'll be fun.
All right, let's get to mailbags. You're going to do the reading this week.
Yeah, I am going to do the reading this week. This is like church.
If you guys want to submit mailbag questions, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast. Put them in the Facebook group, The Bronx Pinstripe Show, which is where the first one is from. Look at that segue, Scott.
I will, if I can find it. So we're going down the segue. I'm blowing it, totally blowing it here. Okay, David. So this one is it's from Frank Golden in our Facebook group. He said, what are your thoughts about Brett Gardner's comments? I expect to be playing next year. Hopefully it's here. And we haven't talked about the Brett Gardner situation yet.
I was waiting to talk about Gardner's ejection for this. So Brett Gardner, I think, has gone full psycho this year. He is, he's off the reservation. He's banging his, you call them the Savage of the Bronx.
Savage of River Ave.
Yeah. He's just banging his bat up against the roof of the dugout. He did it, obviously, in the game when Boone got ejected earlier in the season, was doing it because he was hating the calls from the umpire, which were bad, again. We saw a lot of bad calls over the weekend. But like I think Gardner, I don't know what's gotten into him. Maybe he knows it's because his time in baseball is coming to an end soon. He's just gone full lunatic.
But here's the thing. He's had the opportunity to go full lunatic. He got tossed from a game when he didn't say a goddamn word. Again, this is one of those opportunities for an umpire to say, hey, look at me. I'm here. I'm you don't see me because I'm wearing the same uniform as all these other guys. I'm supposed to be, you know, seen, not heard. Like, you're not really supposed to know that I'm here because I'm supposed to be doing a consistent job, and both teams are supposed to have no problems with what I'm doing, but I have to do it because there's rules and we have to imply them and all these things. No. This guy has thin skin. Another young umpire who's now had a problem with the Yankees, who has thin skin, hears all this talking because the strike zone is dog shit again, and tosses a guy without even looking, just assuming that it's Brett Gardner, not looking over, not seeing who it is, not giving a warning shot saying, hey, Gardner, you need to shut your mouth before I throw you out. No. Just tossing a guy who literally didn't say a word.
Well, because he saw him banging.
Who cares?
And heard. No, listen. He saw him banging and heard yelling and probably just assumed it's Gardner. Not defending him. But then what he did was he lied and said, I saw you say something.
Right.
And Gardner, when he ran out there, said, I didn't say anything. And the guy said, Gardner said, the umpire said to him, I saw you say something. Gardner's like, I didn't open my mouth. And that's when he started to charge.
Yes.
George Brett style at the umpire. And you had Aaron Boone giving him the block. Like, no. Hold me
Boone
back.
Was
hold
struggling.
Me back.
Boone was like, well, Boone's not a small guy. He's a
Boone's,
you know,
6'4". Boone's lanky.
He's got some
Gardner.
He's got dad girth now.
Okay. But you see Gardner's forearms.
Gardner's a crazy lunatic, and his the size of his head alone, he could use that thing as a deadly weapon. So, and he tried, you know, he did the underneath swim move. It was a solid move, got out of it, and you know, he held back.
Well, he was not, because if Boone,
he could have killed that man.
No, but see, the thing is, this is why I always find it funny, because say Gardner got to the umpire, he's not going to punch him. He's not going to tackle
him. There's some wrestling involved with this. So there's some animation involved. He had to make his point. He made his point. There was no fact is the umpire was in the wrong once again, and he made a drastic decision in a game where the fans are coming to watch the baseball players play baseball. I'm not saying fans are coming to watch Brett Gardner play. I'm not saying they're not, though. There could be some Brett Gardner fans that were very disappointed after that. But you know what? It's not the umpire's decision on when they come out, unless they do something egregious, and he did not. Cameron Maben was the one that was running his mouth a little bit, and it was the coaches.
Cameron Maben had a rough series, kind of. He misplayed a couple balls in left field. Gardner said the reason he was also upset is because Judge, who was getting a day off and who had been really struggling, kind of just needed a break, had to go into the game in the fourth inning.
Absolutely. You're kind of, you know, you're hurting the dynamic of what the team's doing. You have days off. You know that guys need that. You're a guy that's benefited from those days off, so you want to make sure that your guys get them. And he's not going to get purposely tossed out of a game over something stupid and then have Aaron Judge knowingly go into the game. So, yeah, it's one of those veteran things where you understand the situation as well. And you're not trying to get tossed there. So it's just one of those things, man, where you need to see an umpire. For me, I want to see some discipline on that guy. And there's got to be some consequences, not just the talking to, but if a player did something egregious like that, there would be discipline. There would be a fine. There would be a suspension. Whatever it is, there needs to be something where these guys are held accountable.
You know what the ironic thing is? These umpires, these young umpires who are making all these crappy decisions, are not helping themselves as it pertains to robo umpires. Like, they don't want robot umpires because then their jobs are in jeopardy. But the more they suck and the more bad decisions they make, the more people are going to call for robot umpires.
The fact that they're available, and we all know that the technology is there, is just like the immediate go-to now. So, like, we know it's not like it's a futuristic thing. Like, oh, someday we should have robotic. No. We could do that tomorrow if we wanted to. So it's a really convenient way to go for a fan. So yeah, anything that you do badly or on the side where you could be scrutinized, like that's the way to go. You go to the area where really there's no error. It is what it is.
I think to Frank's question about Gardner saying he wants to play here next year, I think the Yankees need to make a decision what they want to do with Frazier. And if Clint Frazier is their left fielder, then I don't know if Brett Gardner will be here or should be here.
I mean, I still, it's crazy that we're talking about this, that it's a real possibility, because nobody really, a lot of people didn't think it was a possibility for this year. But, you know, I mean, if he's a fourth outfielder, like that's one thing that you, if you're going to have an, because he can't play center field. So he hasn't physically diminished at all. You haven't seen that. We've seen him get beat up and you know, kind of tail off at the end of the season. So far, we're not seeing that. Who knows what'll happen for the next month, month and change. But, you know, at this point,
well, let's, I
he's
mean,
cemented himself as one of those guys. It's just one of those core guys.
But so assuming, yeah, I know you can't assume health. Obviously, you can't assume health. But you have Judge, Hicks, and Stanton all making a lot of money or locked up or hope to be locked up long term. I know Judge isn't locked up long term, but Judge hopefully is not going anywhere. Then if you have Gardner, Frazier, and then any other depth pieces that like Talkman came out of nowhere. What if Talkman's the real deal?
No, absolutely. There's a lot of, it's not just Frazier anymore. It's probably not Frazier anymore. It's Mike Talkman's now is a potential conversation about this whole thing. So yeah, it's a murky situation, and I think it'll play out the rest of the year. They'll see where they are, and then they'll look at. It wouldn't surprise me either way. If he was back, it wouldn't surprise me. If he wasn't back, it wouldn't surprise me.
Anything else on the Gardner stuff?
No, I mean, it was just great. I did make a video that I was literally like laughing through the video because he's such a lunatic. And the fact that I kept hitting, you know, I was replaying like the same thing, hitting it, the bat against the roof. And then I, cause when I first saw it, first thing I thought of was the Wolf of Wall Street. That's where I got the video. When I saw that, with him hitting the top of the roof, like for some reason my head went there. And so
because Matthew McConaughey played a lunatic in that scene, yeah. And Brett Gardner is a lunatic.
And,
right
and it was kind of like that. And then I went to YouTube and I was looking it up and I found the remix. I'm like, oh my God, this has to be done. I got to do this. So I made the video and it was fun to make. And I literally was laughing through it because he's such a crazy, crazy lunatic doing that. It's probably my wife's favorite part of the season is seeing Brett Gardner do his stupid antics because she loves that kind of thing. Because baseball brings out the child in you. It doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter where you are in your career. You can act like a complete moron, a complete idiot, like a three-year-old, and it's fine.
But it's so weird because we've never seen Gardner do this at any point in his career. Bang, bang, the top of the
It's a new move. He found it. It's a good move. He went to it.
It's going to be his new thing. Because like Paul O'Neill always punched water coolers, but he always did that, you know. Like all of a sudden, Gardner in 30 whatever old he is, his 36 year old season, he's starting to bang bats on the roof.
I mean, he likes it, and he said there's no rule against it until now. Maybe
just watch. They probably will.
Well,
be
maybe now that they're like, you know, Brett, there's no rule, but just so you know, if you do it again, like you're probably going to get warned or tossed or something. Who knows? I like that he's doing it. I like seeing dumb shit on a baseball field. It makes me happy. So it's like watching a basketball coach go completely apeshit. Like I love that too because it's a grown man acting like a complete moron. And it's acceptable. I like that. All right, next one is from David Yu. He says, do you think the Yankees will sign Didi in the offseason or do they move Gleyber to shortstop and put DJ at second? If they do sign Didi, how many years should they give him?
So I think the fact that Urshela has been playing so well and LeMahieu is better than anyone even could have imagined when they signed him, and Didi's contract is up, people are saying like, oh, wow, is Didi actually not going to be on this team long term?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I speak for every single fan of the New York Yankees in saying that we all want him to be a part of this team for a long time. I think Didi has captured the hearts and minds of Yankees fans. We love him on the field, off the field. Like he's the perfect replacement to a legend that we all know of, Derek Jeter. He was the perfect guy to do it. He had a great attitude, has a great attitude, smiles all the time, great clubhouse guy, clutches all hell, and plays an amazing shortstop defensively. So yes, we all want him there. There's no doubt. And I think the Yankees will absolutely make it a priority to try to re-sign him. It's a matter of if Didi and the Yankees are on the same page with the value of this contract, where he thinks he should be, where the Yankees are going to offer it, and if that lines up. Do the Yankees have other shortstops on the team? They do. Maybe I think it personally affects the team in a negative way if they don't sign him. Maybe they don't. Who knows what they think? But I think there will be significant efforts to re-sign him, and I think I got to believe that Didi feels like he wants to re-sign here. It's been a very good thing for Didi.
What's the Seattle shortstop? I'm forgetting.
Segura.
Mm-hmm. Segura. He got like 5 and 70 something.
Okay.
And I think that's like a comp to Didi's. Could be a comp.
Great.
To Didi's
sign
contract.
It tomorrow.
No. But that's what I'm saying. Like, the question was, what do you think they'll give him?
I know.
Like, I could see 5 and 75.
Yeah. I'd say that's a good number. And I think the Yankees should do that 1,000%. And I think Didi would seriously consider that.
Might have to
give him a little bit more. You might have to give him
a little bit more. You might have to give him 80 or something.
Look, there's probably going to be a little bit of a bump for what you've done here as well. Right? Like, I think players, when they see that they've been in a situation for a long time, they've done the right things, he replaced Derek freaking Jeter.
I was having this conversation.
It doesn't get much more difficult than that as far as like the fan acceptance.
So I was talking to someone at work. He's a Mets fan, and we always talk about baseball, and he was like, when did you get Didi? I was like, 2015. He's like, so who was the shortstop in between Jeter and Didi? I'm like, no one. He's like, no. I was like, yeah, it's crazy that Didi came in right after Jeter and somehow was able to be successful and be loved, because it's a next to impossible scenario.
Tino did it with Don Mattingly.
But
it was also a very different scenario in the same. I understand the injury thing, but Tino was coming over from Seattle, who just beat them.
Don Mattingly, and I know people love Don Mattingly. Come on.
He's
not Derek Jeter.
He was a Yankee captain. What I'm saying is, if you're looking for comparables, you have it right there. Maybe it's not to the same level, but it was also very different scenarios in the sense too. Tino Martinez came from a team that literally just knocked Don Mattingly out for his final year, knocked the Yankees out in an opportunity where they had a good team. They had just been screwed by a strike the year before that. Like, there were a lot of good things going that way, and Tino was on the enemy, was on the team to beat them. So there were a lot of
hurdles
to cross.
Tino was
a
good baseball player. Fans could say Tino's a good baseball player. People
who gives a shit?
Do
you think it matters, though, that it's a good... I'd say it's
yes,
almost,
it does matter for...
I'd say it's harder for a good baseball player to come from an enemy and replace a legend than for an obscure guy to overshoot everybody's expectations.
Well, maybe...
In New York.
Maybe I don't know. That's a good point. But what I'm saying, the scenario with Didi is you're replacing a legend with a nobody, and he's sucking in the first half of 2015, making base running errors. And this is like, at the time, people had not heard of Didi Gregorius and still assumed he was a nobody who was going nowhere.
Oh, for the majority of fans, yes, for sure. Nobody was seeing him as the replacement at that point.
No. And here we are 4 years later.
Yeah. And he's the guy.
And we're talking about they need to lock him up to a 5-year contract.
Absolutely. To me, the scenario is pretty close. Like, it's a pretty interesting comparison, because Tino was here for such a long time as well and stayed here. The difference being Tino was an established player with Seattle, and we knew kind of what we were getting, whereas Didi was an unknown. And he exceeded expectations at everybody's level, because nobody had expectations for him at that point, especially replacing Jeter.
Didi also probably knows that his power plays for Yankee Stadium, and I'm not sure another team will value him as much as the Yankees value him.
That's fair, especially with today's metrics. Like, that's going to be exposed. The fact that he doesn't go opposite field for any kind of power at all is a big deal for other teams,
right?
Probably.
I don't even know. I'd have to look down the different teams and who's in the market for a shortstop. So maybe if the market's not there, Yankees could get him for even less than that.
But that's the thing. Like, the Yankees should not. There's going to be an area where they're going to have to pay him for what he's done too, because that's a real thing. Whether it's significant or not, it'll be close. Like, I think they will be. You'd like to think that the Yankees at this point would be freaking signing Didi Gregorius, and not to mention the dollars off the field. Like, the fact that this guy literally does bring butts in seats, that's a big deal. All right.
All right. What's up last?
Last one is from Connor K. He says, can we just take a moment to appreciate Ken Singleton? Him and Paul O'Neill are my favorite color guys. So yeah,
there's so I mean this is like a random thing, but I wanted to bring up, you know, Michael K's been out for basically a month. Ruko's been doing the broadcast, and I know a lot of people love what Ruko has been doing.
A lot of people have, and so I think there's a really interesting thing with this Ruko. I think nobody really dislikes Ruko because he's a really nice guy. He's got the podcast with CC with R2C2. He's a younger guy, but also gets along with the players well. So he kind of speaks the language of the younger baseball fan too. But he's also extremely knowledgeable, qualified, Fordham kid from the area. Like, there's a lot of things that line up for people, what people want to hear. He was on the radio before this, so people know who he is. He's done the Net stuff. He's been with Yes. Like, there's a lot of dots to connect for as far as, like, good things for Ruko. And I think Kay, over the years, has been a bit polarizing in the sense that people, you either like Kay or you don't like Kay. Like, there's two camps. And while I think most people, and in fact, I think all people should respect Kay and what he's done and the fact that he's been a guy around the Yankees for a very long time, you know, that the fact that he started in radio with John Sterling as well with the Yankees and was doing calls on 77 ABC. Like, I remember listening to the Jim Abbott no-hitter. That's one of my biggest memories, you know, thinking about as a kid listening on the radio, was those two calling them on 770. But he's a polarizing guy. He's got a talk show now too, where he leads it. Like, he's talking about everything. So I think that Kay rubs people the wrong way in some areas. Kind of a weird guy in the sense, like, he doesn't eat any, like, the food thing. People like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that annoys me. He doesn't eat vegetables.
It's a little weird. And
you're,
like,
you're not a mature adult.
And he's also got some, you know, he's got some, you know, he punches back on social media. Ruko is just like a nice guy on social media and doesn't really do that. People don't really come at him either though. So I think it's kind of a perfect storm.
I think it depends what you want out of your broadcast. Ruko's not going to, like you said, ruffle any feathers.
Right.
Ruko is knowledgeable. He is definitely more up to date on what's going on social media and podcasts and more connected to the younger generation of fans.
Absolutely. He does NBA stuff, which is
but
also
just
big.
Like, just
or WNBA
we
stuff.
Also have to remember, we live in a bubble on Yankees Twitter and Yankees social media. The majority of people watching Yes are not our age. They're not on Twitter.
Right. That's true.
It's an older generation.
Sure.
So they probably like the broadcast that Michael Kay is doing better than the one that Ryan Ruko is doing.
Yeah, that's very possible. I have no idea what the demographics in, like, what the insights are talking about.
Baseball all over, MLB ratings are, they skew old. They don't skew young.
I understand that, but you also look at some of the Yes. I mean, I get emails from that about that, about, like, when the Yes touts, like, when we've had a big game in market and, you know, like, what their ratings have been, the Nielsen ratings or whatever they are for viewership, and they're definitely up overall. Like, I'm not saying one, I don't know what the numbers are between Ruko and Kay, but they're up because the team is good. So I think largely
right, a broadcaster is not going to put
largely it's dependent
make
on
people
the team.
Turn TV on.
If it's a bad team, I feel like you could find out more about the broadcast team.
Yeah.
You know, like, what people think about it at that point. But if it's a good team, people just kind of go along with it no matter what. But
do you think a broadcaster will cause someone to turn on or turn off their TV?
Yes. I'm raising my hand.
No, I'm not talking about like okay, yeah, you're not going to watch, you don't like Joe Buck, so you're not going to watch
I don't
the
mind
Fox.
Joe Buck. I don't mind Joe Buck anymore.
Okay, fine. Whoever
A-Rod.
You don't, okay, A-Rod. Okay, fine.
I hate
but if it's the Yankees
the Sunday
playing
night
Sunday
team.
Night Baseball, you're still going to watch. I know you're not going to watch the Cubs versus the Cardinals Sunday night game because A-Rod will annoy you, but if the Yankees are playing, you're still going to watch. You're not going to turn off.
Oh, absolutely. But guess what? I did mute it. For a large part of the game. I'm
I don't
serious.
Think ESPN cares because they're still getting
I know,
the
but my point is that they affected the how I watched the game. I can't handle some of the things that they say. It bothers me.
I just don't
me.
Think – I don't think
me.
Whether people like Kay or hate Kay. You're right. I think people have stronger opinions on Kay than they do Ruko.
Yes.
But you know what? I think that's probably a good thing for Michael Kay.
Probably.
Because
I think that
I
makes
agree.
His radio Ruko, show better because people will listen to disagree with you.
Uh-huh. I mean, we've learned that on a very
Absolutely.
Smaller scale with this podcast. So I think as good of a job as Ruko has done, and I think he's done a great job.
Mike Francesa is still on the air for one reason.
Well, that's
no,
that's
no,
all
no. But that's very relevant to this. The reason he's still on the air is the older crowd is listening to him.
It's the older crowd, but also disagreements.
But the
also
younger crowd
drive ratings.
I don't think the younger crowd's listening to him on the radio.
Michael Kay
I think
brings,
the younger
Michael
crowd's listening to Funhouse, and then
oh yeah, Funhouse,
and then commenting on it on Twitter.
Yes. But for Michael Kay's Yes broadcast with the Yankees, I think he brings up more interesting points than so far Rucco has brought up, discussing points about the team. And maybe I care about that stuff more because I think Kay does an ESPN radio show for 3 hours a day. So this is like his world he's living in. Rucco doesn't seem like he's the type to bring that kind of stuff up. He's not going to really criticize the team. He's not going to call something out when something doesn't go well. Maybe he's not going to do that because he's not full-time at this point.
Well, I think there's a couple things. That's a good point. When you're talking about the difference between the two of them, yes, one of them is younger. One of them is more in tune with like pop culture and stuff. But one of them definitely has, a better, more strong relationship with the players inside there as well. That's
Rucco, 100%.
But that's a big factor. Like, he's not going
to... So he doesn't want to... If
he doesn't want to ruffle
negative.
Those relationships, yeah, he'll be fair. He's fair, I think, but maybe not in close situations. He's probably not as fair as you would see a Rucco guy.
It can go off the rails because you want your broadcasters to say what you're thinking. A lot of people, that's their ideal broadcast. Say what I'm thinking,
yeah.
Because if a team leaves the bases loaded with nobody outs and they don't score. Like, it's not ho-hum, move on to the next inning. You're mad as a fan.
So we've heard from this show, like, one of the overwhelming things that we've heard from feedback from our show is that I think a lot of people relate to the fact that we will be emotional about certain things and talk about them in a way that we see them. We're not going to sugarcoat it. We're not going to bullshit about it. Like, it is what it is. We see it. We say it because we're fans. We're in that position where we can just talk about it. And it is what it is. We're not trying to appease anybody. Like, nobody's looking over our shoulder.
No. But when you have it is funny when we get the occasional person to think we're like in the pocket, like the team is in our pocket. It's like, are you out of your goddamn mind?
No.
But here, let me finish my thought. This is where when the Chappelle thing, when keeping it real goes wrong, Dennis Eckersley and the shit he's talked about, David Price, like that shit hit the fan. There was a whole big issue on the team plane. So yes, broadcasters can take it too far. And I think Kay takes it to an acceptable level where I don't think any player in that clubhouse is going to go to Michael Kay and say, I can't believe you said this.
Clint Frazier. Only one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He did. Yep.
Okay. And that was almost like a misspoke. Like, he kind of backstepped from what he said because
that was on his radio show, though, not on
right. News. So, but he's still talking. Like, it is still that guy. But he's one. You're probably talking about the most polarizing Yankees player that's come along in a long time, and then
one of the most sensitive too.
One of the most sensitive.
That's not gonna put blinders on.
Well, and also I think some of the things that Kay said were almost taken differently than what he meant. And I know that's a very gray line as far as what you're trying to say and how it's interpreted sometimes, but I don't know. Like, so I think there's things that can happen there as well. But Rucco is definitely friends with some of these guys. And I think a lot of fans enjoy that part of it though, because you're seeing the inside looks and it's not just a formal interview. Like if we had a guy on our show and we've had guys on our show before, it's probably not going to be the same dynamic as Rucco sitting in the press box with him, with CeCe there, who is also like an intermediary who's on the team. And like the level of comfort and the way that they approach those interviews is very, they're not interviews, they're conversations, they're different. And I get that. It's an inside view. And I think a lot of people love that part of the way that Rucco is. While he's calling a game, like some of his home run calls have been phenomenal. I'm not criticizing anything Rucco has done because I really like Rucco a lot.
This isn't criticizing either of them.
It's just different styles.
It's just to say that they're different, and I think there could be a place for both of them on next year's broadcast because I think
together
there's a, I don't know, together, but
because I mean
alternate.
We've seen that for the past few years.
You could filter in Rucco more.
He could
do more games,
and maybe that's the thing.
Here's what I'm saying: I enjoy both broadcasts. I like both. So I would actually think I would like to have both more often because maybe a full season of Rucco could get stale and a full season of Kay could get annoying. So have them both. No, that's fair.
I think anything, too much of one thing. You could always say that too. But you know, Kay is just more of like, I think he definitely brings the more of the historian side to baseball as well. So I think when you have more of the traditionalists, they're gonna look for Kay. They're gonna be on Team Kay. When you have a younger guy who has, I think him. With Rucco, and the other thing is Rucco and the dynamic of the other guys in the booth. Like, I think it's very different. The dynamic between Cohn and Rucco, I think, is really good. I think they're both on. Cohn really appreciates like the younger side of it. I think because Cohn does, he's more into the metrics. He's more into that side, and I think they have a different dynamic.
The Rucco Singleton wasn't that great.
I love Kenny Singleton. He's one of those guys that's a...
I know, but it, you could just tell they weren't.
So I disagree. I disagree. I think Rucco and Singleton are great. I disagree. I think Rucco and Flaherty were terrible.
No one's really a Flaherty
fan. But there was a weird thing there. Like, they almost, like, you could tell they didn't like each other. That's what I thought was something weird. I thought Singleton's one of those guys, like, he tries to be cool. And because of that, he is cool, because he's Kenny Singleton. You know, like, he's just the guy, like, how could you ever say anything bad about him?
But see, I think Singleton does a really good job doing the play-by-play, and he was the color guy while Rucco was doing the play-by-play.
I like Kenny Singleton as a color guy, though, man. Like, I like that old school baseball guy. That's why I like Harold Reynolds, because he just talks. I like those guys who just talk, who've played. I like that. You know? Different flavors.
Good talk, Scott. Thank you guys for submitting mailbag questions. Like I said, submit those for every Monday's episode. Any last words?
No, man, that was a fun episode. I enjoyed talking that last thing about. I don't think a lot of people have talked about the dynamic. People are just like, oh, I like this guy, don't like that guy. Like, talk it out. Why don't you like him? Why do you like him? Like, what are the reasons? I feel like you can get to.
Because also, everyone has to have an opinion. Yeah. Like a black or white. Everything is black or white on Twitter. It's like, no, I like both.
There's a world where you can like multiple things. It's okay.
All right, that's gonna do it for this episode. We will talk to you guys Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.